This is the beginning of class 3.
Sashi Bhagi Jushin Eto Jam Vira Vinci Nyende Kempadi Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jogunanda Shingla Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodama Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyasu Chi Dagi Chunyen Dibbe Sunangi Drola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodama Jubadu dami kasuchi Dagi chumyen dipe sunangi Jola penche sangye jubasho Sangye chudan sangye chudama Jubadu dami Suchi Dahi Chunyen Gimbe Sunamki Yola Penche Sange Jubashu
Yamsha, alright, sorry. And everyone who didn't answer was right. Namshak is the sixth kind of meditation. We talked about six different kinds of meditation, six different words for meditation. And Namshak means you're out of deep meditation and you're having these realizations, including what?
Four Noble Truths.
Four Noble Truths. That's the word noble is, as we said before, the wrong translation of the word kapa, which means at that point you become a realized type of being. And those are called realized truths. Arya. So, Yamcha is as opposed to Jetop. Jetop is when you're seeing the Four Noble Truths, thinking about the Four Noble Truths. Oh, this is suffering, this is this. You actually realize them directly for the first time in ever. But Yamcha occurs right before that, and that's when you're actually in deep meditation on emptiness. And that's the classic example of Yamcha.
How is that different than another of these meditations?
Well, they all overlap and they're all fuzzy, and I'm giving you the major sense. You notice I said general sense and I didn't say definition because they all overlap.
So really that could be like a part of
Myeongjeok
when you're seeing.
It is a kind of gomba. It is a thing in Zen. It's no longer non-discursive thought.
It is discursive thought.
It is. This is this, this is that. Oh, this is this, this is that. It's exactly that. It's not like when you're perceiving emptiness and it's just like they call water poured in water.
Discursive thought about what you've seen in emptiness.
You're thinking, I saw emptiness. Jetop. Most of the paths have these two stages in them, the higher paths. But don't worry about it. If you haven't had it before, it's okay. It's not on the quiz, nothing. I felt guilty because I left that out and everybody had trouble on homework.
After
I did
you
that last time and they called me up on the phone.
So this would be after you see the four Arya truths? Then Jetop?
You are in Jetop when
you
see
the four.
When you are seeing the four. Jetop means what you get afterwards. J means afterwards and Top means get. Alright? Okay, now actually we'll go on to the lesson. Alright? Alright? And when a princess in India went to a ball, she would alankara she would put her jewelry on. So alankara means a jewel, in the sense of jewelry. And sutra means any open teaching of the Buddha spoken by a Buddha. So it's the jewel of the sutras. And it's written by It's not a sutra, it's a commentary on sutras. And it's written by, who wrote the other ones, the other Alankara? Do you remember?
What was it? What was that one called?
The Abhisamma Alankara. Jewel of Realization. Ornament of Realization.
Haribabu?
Ah, he wrote the commentary. Good, not bad. Asanga. Okay. You have to know Asanga, alright? Asanga lived when? You guys know.
About
350? Yeah. About 350 AD. I told you this story before. His mother was a nun. She had a vision that if she... Buddhism was declining in her era, and she had a vision that if she gave up her vows and married a king, that they would have a child, and that if she then married another, a Brahmin, they would have a child, and that those two sons would become the two greatest scholars almost of all time, next to the other. So one of her sons was a Sangha. And between him and his brother, they wrote every single book that's used in the monastic curriculum, except for, I mean, they wrote two of them. Two of the great five books are by those two brothers. So they're responsible for just about, you study the first book for 12 years. You have five characteristics. It's the book from which Tsongkhapa has taken the description of a good place to meditate, a conducive place to meditate.
When you say in the book, this list, you're talking about both books, or...
It's actually three or four. It's a stream, and I...
Well, what should we refer to it as?
If I ask you who described, and I'm going to ask you, the conducive place to meditate, you're going to answer. A Sangha described it 350 AD in his Jewel of the Sutra.
Now, is this is Jason Kappa's commentary, though, or is this a Sangha?
Yeah, Tsongkhapa is quoting him. Tsongkhapa is explaining what a Sangha said, because if you go and try to read a Sangha, forget it.
And this is just Jason Kappa in Lam Rinpoche Mo explaining Sangha.
Which is like, Buddhism is like an onion. Yeah. I mean, Buddhist learning is like an onion. And you
get things? Is that what you mean?
Well, that's one meaning of it. But you shouldn't have to think about anything else.
Like, and oh, so there's no electricity.
The food should be set up for you. Yeah. People tend to think, you know, when the Buddhism first came to America, I don't know if you knew Alex Matikov. He heard about Milarepa. He went out in the forest next to our house. And he got cold and came back after 2 days. I mean, it doesn't work. You have to be comfortable. It's very smart to get a place, make sure it's nice, and it should be comfortable. And everything you need is there. You have someone cooking for you. It's very bad if you have to cook your own food. Someone else should be cooking. Because otherwise, you're going to think, what should I cook tonight? You know, I have to cook for this. Maybe I should put that. You start meditating on what you'd like to eat tonight. It's very bad. Someone else should be cooking. You should have no contact with him. In New Jersey, we've done it. Tom did a good meditation. They put it under your or something. You don't know what you're going to get, so you don't order up in a cave above Dharamsala. And it's a problem. I've had bears and stuff. It's a little scary. You shouldn't have. It very much interrupts your mental. I had a skunk one time.
Oh, man.
It's very bad. So it should be a place where you're not threatened in any way. And they also say bad people, that you shouldn't have... any place where you have an enemy or someone who doesn't like you, any kind of a threat to you, it should be a comfortable place, a safe place.
What's the word for that safe place?
I can give it to you if you like, but it's in your reading.
Okay.
And the verse is very cryptic, like all the ancient verses were. They were meant to be memorized by the student maybe 10 years before he knew what it meant. And they still do that in the monastery. And then the function, the role of the teacher is to show you, hey, this is what that means. Then he says you should have a good environment. And he explains that as meaning It should be a place where you go in the afternoon, and by night it was snowing and in the desert, and it was distracting. It got very cold. So, you know, you got to find a place where the weather's... But you also have to make sure that whatever it is that you use doesn't make noise.
The heater and stuff?
You know? Yeah, like if a fire is very distracting, a heater that goes click, click, any noise... After you've been in retreat for about a month, a mouse can be a disaster, you know, and they are, you know. So you have to find, just don't be shy to find a normal house in a normal place, away from sound as much as you can. I think a refrigerator can be a disaster. I found it that if you've done a retreat for about a month, it starts to sound like a truck, you know. And then you go and unplug everything in the house before you sit down, you know. Very distracting. So very important that you don't have any noises. And in your daily practice, we're talking 15 minutes, half an hour. The good thing about doing it is early in the morning or as you can, which I find better than late at night, but I saw in your papers a lot of you, maybe you just don't have time till late at night. Late at night is good, and we'll see it later, in that it's quiet. You know, at least in general, it's more quiet in the early morning or the late night. Sound, it's very famous. In all the scriptures it says that sound is the worst distraction. Sound is very bad when you're trying to meditate. Hmm.
No squirrels digging into the roof.
We have squirrels. Okay. Number four is, he calls it good friends. And it's that whoever's assisting you in the retreat should be a person who has faith in the Dharma. And he shares your values. He has good morality, and he believes in the Buddhist worldview, which, you know, mostly emptiness. Should be a person like that. If you've ever had a person, if you're in retreat, and because you don't have any choice, you have someone coming to help you, you have to be in a two-week retreat. And don't waste your time. Set up everything very, very intelligently, you know, based on this. And talk to people who've done long retreats before. And they have, after you do one, it's good to make a list of all the things that you did wrong. And then the next time you do it, you know what you need. Like chapstick is very important. Incense is very important. You know, you get a list of things that are very important. And you learn more about it every time you do one. So talk to people who've done long retreats before. And don't screw up the opportunity. Because once you get into the retreat and close the door, you're not supposed to go out for a month or something. And if you figure out that you forgot something, you have to start writing notes. I mean, that's a distraction. Better if you don't see anyone. You know, close the windows. Tape up. Put something over the windows. Don't
go outside. How long should one go into a retreat?
I think in our tradition, I mean, there are three-year retreats. There are 3-month retreats. 3 year, 3 months, 3 days. Okay. 3 days, 3 months. But I think if you... For example, if you take that initiation this summer, or if you've had that initiation, you will be required to do a certain number of retreats. And they last between 4 and 5 weeks. And they're very great, because once you take that initiation, you swear to do it. And I know I worked for 10 years, I didn't have time to do anything. I was exhausted every day, and I didn't do any retreats. And then I got on a different schedule, and I was able to do them again. It's a very good, it's good to be forced to do one, because otherwise you'll just go on and never do one. And it's very important to do that. They change you dramatically. So it's very, then especially those retreats, which you have, there are books on how to do it, the training, everything, and they're wonderful. They come out really good. And they're not what you expect. What you're supposed to do is not what you expect. And it works. It's very nice. Kylie did. How many did you do? 1, 2. It's one of the things. During the day, there shouldn't be a lot of people around. A, and there should be no sound. The voice sounds.
So
it has nothing to do with goodness, but
has nothing to do with like if your mom meditated there before.
No. It's a very difficult verse, and Tsongkhapa is explaining it.
So when you say cover the windows, you mean you shouldn't really even be able to see what's outside the window? Is that what you mean?
No, like where I used to go, there was this, was it Mount something? There's a beautiful snow mountain at the back. So I would leave a little strip across the top of the window. But what I mean is you shouldn't be able to see any living beings.
But
squirrels,
like,
dogs, people.
No movement, no activity.
Yeah. Tape it up, you know, to the top of the window if you can. Or you, I'd like to use these white curtains, these, what do you call them?
Shades.
Yeah, the inside of a curtain.
Shears.
Yeah. And then the light, you can get the light and you don't have to see anybody. And then the light is very nice. It's very helpful sometimes when you meditate.
So looking at the scenery is okay? Or?
You have to just be normal. Good eating, good, happy thinking. By the way, no music. That's a disaster. No TV, obviously. No radio. No books. No magazines, no newspapers. No personal letters. Those are all a disaster.
No Dharma books, no.
Dharma book, if you're getting loom. And you see, that also becomes a distraction. It becomes an excuse to not think and not be inside your mind. And you'll find that you're craving it, you know. And it's not because you want to study Dharma. It's because you want to have some stimulation, you know. So that's better.
What about a book that's on the particular practice?
Well, that's good, but it's better if you can read it before. You have to have some prayer books. You have to be doing some
practice.
And if you have a commentary, but even the commentary can become a distraction. It's better to learn it well and then go in. Because you'll find yourself reading the commentary not because you want to understand the practice, but you want some kind of stimulation other than thinking, you know. And it's good. It's very smooth. You feel no dizzy or lightheaded. You break into giggling sometimes. Get silly with nobody around. I mean, you know, I was one night I was getting into this tremendous laughter about doing a thinking of a prank on my brother who I haven't met for a long time, you know, just starting to giggle. And what else, Carly? You know,
I think if you start thinking a lot of interesting thoughts and you start just fixing on them and then not sleeping, thinking about
not
them
sleeping
all night.
I guess that's the biggest one. The biggest, like if you're in deep meditation and you start not sleeping, that's very bad. One person who you're supposed to communicate with is your Nama. He should be close by. At least in necessity, you should be able to phone him if you can. Otherwise, by the way, no phone. If you can take it out, don't have it available to yourself. He should be available to help you. So it's very good if you can do a retreat near your Nama or where you can at least contact him and get his advice. Sometimes it's better to just break it and start over again later. So I think the worst sign is that you'll start not sleeping.
It's especially if you're having wonderful thoughts and realizations as a result of your meditation and you start staying up all night thinking about those. And then what about eating the right food to try to counteract that?
Yeah, it's like heavy food.
I mean, a lot of protein and meat and onions.
If you're vegetarian, it's very important to eat a lot of protein, you know, like cheeses and nuts and sour things. But I think that depends on each person.
Yeah, I was going to say, my experience was just the opposite.
Yeah.
I was taken off oils completely because I had problems with being too sleepy.
So it might, I'm talking about when you have the opposite.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more. We'll get to it later. Okay.
So those symptoms like shortness of breath and can't breathe smoothly, dizzy, all of that, over what period of time?
Chokshepa means, it's the Tibetan word to be satisfied. Easily satisfied with whatever you get. So what are the difference between the two? Dapa Chinwa means from the beginning you don't want much. And Chokshepa means whatever you get, you feel, okay, that's enough. Those are two different mental functions, actually. This comes from a very, very fantastic book called Abhidhamma Kosha. I remember when I was a student and I used to get frustrated by these Sanskrit words. They just went on and on and I couldn't remember. I couldn't see any difference between most of them. Sanskrit is written without any spaces. Because when one word gets close to another word, they join. And they become the two letters at the ends form a new letter. So you can't break them apart. And it's very hard to read Sanskrit. Abhidharma means higher knowledge. Kosha means a treasure.
This is the brother?
Yeah, I was going to trick you after. I misspelled this. I think there's an H in here, but I always forget what it's here. I worked for 10 years on his book. I'll put it here.
So then the first one is from Asanga, and then these two are from Dasubandhu?
I think I misspelled. I'll check it for you. Dasubandhu is the other brother. He's Asanga's half-brother.
Were those books written in Tibetan?
No, this is in Sanskrit.
It was written in Sanskrit?
Yeah, about 600 years before Buddhism came to Tibet. And so these are by the ancient...
So all of them were written in Sanskrit?
All the books we're going to study in this five-year course started in ancient India. They are the original books of Buddhism. So Vasubandhu wrote the Abhidharma Kosha. When do you think he lived?
On the same time as his brother.
Okay, easy. Yeah, I have it wrong.
How is he the half brother?
Well, remember that he came. I don't remember which came
she
from Brahma.
She married. She married. She got around that night.
She had two. Be careful. She was a holy.
She's around in the holy
way. he has a chapter, his book, the Abhidharma Kosha. I spent 10 years translating the first Dalai's commentary too. And it's incredible. It's just incredible. And we'll study it someday. In the monastery, you study it just before your Geshe examination. And these two principles he lists as important for meditation. Okay. So, in general, your meditation can't succeed. Once you go into that room, forget about everything else. You don't need anything else. Live without whatever you live without. You know, be happy with whatever you have. If you're thinking purposely, don't iron your shirt or something. If you're going to work and you have the right, you need to have Yanda Pitsala. According to Buddhism, you need to support yourself and not grub off other people. And you've got to stand on your own two feet and not bother other people. So you should have a job. It should be a nice job. You don't have to do anything wrong. You should look neat and nice, and you should do okay. That doesn't mean that, but it means be satisfied with that. Don't go to Macy's if you can go to what's the other one? Someplace
Salvation Army.
Could you just say what the difference is?
Yeah, again, they're kind of hard to distinguish. Dapa Chungwa means not wanting many things, and Chok Shepa means being satisfied with whatever you get. It's not quite the same. Dipa Chungwa means from the beginning you don't need much. And Chok Shepa means whatever you get, no matter how lousy it is, okay, that's enough. That's enough.
Does this apply only to worldly things, or what about your like hunger for the Dharma? Are you supposed to sort of be satisfied with...
No. And they were great Buddhist practitioners. In other words, and the first tantric practitioners were kings in India who went to the Buddha and said, look, we don't have time for this, all this studying, or can you just give us something a little powerful? And that was some of the original tantras were designed by the Buddha for them. So it doesn't mean to give up, you don't have to give up even a very high position in the company, or you don't have to give up money, even wealth, great wealth. It just means that I think it was the seventh Dalai Lama said, the only thing I consider that I own is my bell and my door, you know, my ritual, my two little ritual instruments. And the rest, I own half the country. But I don't feel like it's mine. If someone took it, I could handle that. And the present Dalai Lama, I mean, if you think about the power of a king or a Dalai Lama, he can go to any person in the country and say he needs anything and they have to do it to him. It's not like America where, you know, there can be a scandal and they can kick him out. He owns everything in the country, basically. And he just left it and came to India and lived like a beggar. You know? That's a good sign. Mm-hmm. That shows something. It means you can have it, and if you have it, use it well. And many people do. Many wealthy people use it very well. But then have the right attitude about it. Be ready to give it up on an instant.
I feel like being Pat Robertson without the urge to ask people for money.
So John Mohawk, it means give up doing a lot of things. Don't, when you We're talking about a retreat in which you're consciously trying to develop shamatha. You go into that retreat thinking, by the time I come out, I'm going to have perfect meditation. And it takes time.
You know, it seems like that contradicts what you said earlier. This is saying give up a lot of things, but not everything.
No, it means, well, it means do the few things that you have to do, which is set up your altar, you know, clean the floor. Even that you can get obsessed on, you see? Your mind plays tricks on you, you know? Just, maybe I should spend a little more time preparing the altar, you know, not quite sitting quite so long, you know? Or maybe I should get up and change the incense right now. Mm. Your mind doesn't want you to sit there. Okay, have some tea and visit. We'll start in 10 minutes. Especially when you get pains in your body, which you will.
When you
they go
what?
Away
you
after a while.
You don't exercise or anything at all? No stretch?
Some people do prostration to wear out, but I don't know. It can also be painful.
What?
A distraction. Become a distraction.
Well, not having any exercise
can be a distraction. But you can do it. You can do it. You can get away with it. Don't do anything. Okay, say Tsuchin Dakpa.
Tsuchin
Dakpa. What's Tsuchin mean, you know? How much does that mean? Tsuchin means morality.
Huh?
Morality. Morality is defined in Buddhism as Shen Yu Shi Dan Che Bo Ren. Don't buy your own. Sucha Yin Shi Dibu Dan. Boy, it's not a good thing. Something that you know, Shen. Give it to me. Number one. Oh, ma. Which means. The basic thing is not harming anyone. Avoiding any harm to another living being. That's morality.
What is harm?
Causing them physical and mental suffering. Physical and mental suffering. Cause anyone else physical or mental suffering.
That's yoga, sir.
That's the definition of morality. Avoiding causing any mental or physical suffering. That's what Sutra means. Dapa means pure. Pure morality.
That all sentient beings are human beings.
All sentient beings. And yourself. You're not allowed to commit suicide.
But what about all the
times
when you cause someone to suffer for something good that might happen?
That's not causing them to suffer. When a good teacher knows the time to smack his student in the head, which I have to cut. It's very good.
Not
so. Okay. This means that if you've been in a long retreat, you know. Can you hand me that paper from this room? Now we are. Yeah, right? I'm sorry. You're cold. Okay. She's gonna find me. Okay. When you do a deep meditation in a deep, long retreat, if you've ever done it, if you go into the retreat with any bad deeds on your conscience, you will never you'll never be able to develop good concentration. Forget it. Forget it. And it's just in general with concentration. If you have any activity that you which you're doing regularly, which you know in your heart to be wrong or harmful, you won't be able to develop concentration. Most of us who do bad deeds, even though we know they're wrong, in my case, one of them is that I say harsh things to people at work. It's like, I want to joke and I say the wrong thing and I hurt someone's feelings. It's common, very common with me. You can't control yourself. You know, the idea is you know it's wrong, you're trying to stop it, but you can't control yourself. Then you just have to keep doing proper confession that we talked about and try to prevent yourself. I mean, if you're working on it, it's not that you can't have concentration. But if you are, particularly with monks, if you're trying to hide something wrong that you're doing, you cannot reach. You know, we say if you hide, A monk can commit his worst. He can break almost any vow and not lose his vow. In fact, he can break any vow and not lose his vow, as long as he doesn't hide it. You know, as long as he tells people. So it's very important that you not go into a retreat, or you not try to develop good meditation with anything on your conscience that you know to be bad. And in general, leading up to your retreat, you should try to be really good for a while, if you can. And most of us, if you know it's wrong, you can't stop, then make sure you have a good outlet for confession. The minimum is that you confess it in front of your image. But much better if you can do it to your mama, because it's much more embarrassing, and you probably won't do it. If you, there's any way you can get out of telling your mama. I've done really bad things, and sometimes when I couldn't control myself, I would set a goal. I'd say, I'm going to tell Rinpoche. If you know Rinpoche, he's tough. You know, so I did not want to tell him openly what I do. So I would rather restrain. Under any circumstances, if I had promised myself I would tell Rinpoche, I would be pretty safe not to do the thing. So, although not always, and sometimes I had to go to him and tell him, it was very embarrassing. So, I mean, but it's once you get into that habit of revealing to people, to your lama, what you've done wrong, it's very, very healthy, very, very good thing. And your mind, your conscience will be clear. And then your meditation is really nice. So this is, again, one of those things. I've had many people come up to me and say, ah, I tried to develop shamatha and nothing happened. I went into retreat. I got a little happy for a few days. I got a little calm. I could hear my heart beat in my ears and stuff. Or to translate into that. It can mean fantasy. It can mean imagination. It can mean wrong thought. I've translated it as a stupid thought in, in your text that you know. And it refers to, in this case it's desire, but it can be anger and other kinds of thoughts. But we mainly mean desire. Desire means two things here. One is the object of the senses, or sometimes called objects of desire in Tibetan. It doesn't mean a pretty lady, or it doesn't mean a big pile of money or something like that. It just means sounds, unique colors, tastes, sensations on your body. When you get deep into meditation, you will have to withdraw from those also. That's why it's so important to get your body into the right position, because once you take that position, you're going to withdraw from your body. You know, you're not going to be aware anymore of your body. So it should be in a position that when your mind withdraws from the body, it can keep breathing and going on without falling over, without the mouth drying out, and without slobber coming down your tongue. You know, I mean, when you're in deep meditation, the body should be so supported. In India, sometimes they would put the Hindu meditators, which I did meditation 20 years ago, they had a special thing to keep the body up while they were in meditation. So you're going to withdraw from all your senses, and that means to give up nanto, give up those kinds of perceptions. It also means just to give up wanting anything. And that's the main sense of which Tsongkhapa, in his commentary on the Tibetan Rite, he says in his commentary, which you can read in the back, this desire also means here any kind of desire for anything in your life, any normal worldly thing in your life. And he says, think about it. Trying to get them, you do bad deeds. You cause other people pain. You cause yourself pain. Trying to get worldly objects. Secondly, they're doomed. Even if you get it. You've been in this situation. I've had students come to me can you give me some practice, and if I do it, I can get a good job? And I did. And some of them did. But I knew what was going to happen. After 6 weeks, I said, I hate this job. It's so bad.
Can you get practice for a better job?
You know, it always changes. You know, every desirable thing changes. Every good thing you lose. Every worldly good thing you will lose, period. And so Tsongkhapa in his commentary, which you can read, he says, you know, think about it. You're crazy. It's crazy. Don't go and try to go into meditation wanting. You have to go into meditation with an attitude of renunciation. Anything else in your life is you're gonna lose. Sometimes I think the worst thing at work is if you get to be a vice president, and then you find out there's nothing there, and then you're stuck. It's very embarrassing to go from vice president down to something else. You know? So, but you have to actually quit.
Gonna leave, yeah.
Nothing can satisfy you, and whatever you get of all the things you struggle to get, you will lose, and you'll have suffering as you lose it. So give it up. Give up those kind of ideas. Give up those thoughts.
One question about meditation and the senses, and all those little things that you do as preliminaries, like the incense and all that stuff. Yes. That's descriptive.
It can be. I mean, if you are... I've found in long retreats, you must lose what other health you have. And I think what bothers me and a lot of other people here, maybe, you must become stupid. You, I'll forget all my Tibetan. I'll forget most of what I studied. You know, if I live long enough. I mean, that's, you're doomed to mental decrepitude also. And that's frustrating. As you start to age, that's very frustrating. Whatever good deeds you do are going to have to be so ingrained in you that as you get stupid later on, they are habitual. Because you're not, no longer going to be able to conceive of these good ideas you have. Everything fails. So that don't go after things that are going to plant seeds that are worthless. You're going to lose everything you have. And then I always hear these ladies, it's so funny. I'm not going to get fat like my mother was. You know, I go, you know. When I was a teenager, I used to check out the mother first, you know, because if the mother got the fatter, the mother looked old. The daughter's going to get the same, you know. Come on. What do you think? You think you're different from the millions of generations that came before? We're all going to be like this. It's silly. There's nothing you can keep except very deep seeds of dominance. They go on. Okay. Tsongkhapa then says, and this is the last thing that's on your homework. You've had this last week, do you remember? Gomrim. Gomrim is the book from which he took all six. Everything I've said tonight, Tsongkhapa took from Gomrim.
So Tsongkhapa took it from Gomrim?
Yeah.
I thought
he took the first step from Asanga, and so did Gomrim.
Okay.
Okay. So don't get confused. I'll repeat that.
What about two and three?
Tonight we talked about six conditions. The first condition was staying in a conducive place. That had five parts to it, which you don't have to remember. Not responsible for those five parts came from another book by Asanga. But all six of what we talked about tonight, the whole list that you had now, those came from Gomrim. Written when? And we talked about it. He was the one who defeated the Chinese master. Kamalashila. So as usual, Tsongkhapa is saying, I didn't make this up, this is not my idea, it comes from a very good source, it's from the Gomrim of Kamalashin. Gomrim means stages of meditation. You recognize the rim as in long rim, right? It's three huge books. You know, it's beautiful. We have a sample for it. So that was written in 1750.
So is the Abhidhamma Kosha also then in the Gobind?
Now, what about Abhidhamma Kosha? Abhidhamma Kosha is the source for two of the six ideas I talked about tonight. Two of the conditions I talked about tonight. What we need. Yeah. Not wanting a lot of things and being satisfied with whatever you get originally came from the Abhidhamma Kosha. And then Kamala Shila used those. So if I ask you on the homework, who wrote the book for all six, you'll say Kamala Shila. Then if I say, who wrote the book for those two concepts, being happy with whatever you get and not wanting it, that's the Bandhu in the Abhidhamma. And then if I say, who wrote the five parts of the first thing I talked about, which is conducive to the
sun.
So I just want you to get it straight. You don't get confused. I have this very important... Yeah, one more time. The source... By the way, who wrote the whole book? It's not on your homework. Tsongkhapa is talking. Tsongkhapa is pulling his... What he's using for all six that I've talked about tonight. Which are what? I gotta have a name of this now. You have to meditate on it. The place, and then what? Good place? Mm-hmm. Not wanting many things? Mm-hmm. Being satisfied with what you have? What's number four?
Giving up the
wrong
activities.
Yeah, giving up the wrong activities. Then morality.
Morality.
And then, what's number six? Yeah, getting rid of desire and similar stupid thoughts. All six of those come from Gomrin. Who wrote Gomrin? When did he live? We don't know exactly. Who is Tsongkhapa using for the very first one of those six? The five parts of the six. Where I stay in a place where there's no wild animals. Yeah, a song of Gomrin. In his sutra on Who is the source that Kamala Shiva uses for the second and the third? Not wanting many things and being easily satisfied. That's his half.
You said that there's a Sanskrit version of this?
The Sanskrit is available. It was originally written in Sanskrit. Why don't we have the Sanskrit of 99% of the other books?
They
were burned by the Muslims when they came to India.
But you also said that Kamala Shila was the person who defeated that Chinese school of meditation in Tibet. So we were.
Oh, he was visiting scholar.
He came from
India. Yeah, he came from India. He was one of the first carriers of Buddhism from India. He says that. He's calling a friend. And what he's saying, what are the first four protectors for people who are brand new? Charity, giving.
Morality.
Patience, meaning we don't have a word in English, not getting angry when the time comes and you should get angry. So patience is also what you do when you're waiting for the bus. It doesn't mean that. See, it means not to get angry when the time comes. And there isn't a good word in patience partly comes in, but it means when that guy at work says that thing that just hurts you a lot, and I get it every day, you get it every day. If you work in a large office, somebody says something during the day that hurts you, you chill out, okay? No, you don't get angry. This is a great, great Buddhist practice. Shantideva says it's the most beautiful Buddhist practice. It could well be, not only this, but it could very well be that you haven't done these preparations. So try them. So what you're meditating on this week is those six conditions. Just go over them in your mind. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. What are they? And use those six preparations that you've had, which were what? Just to go, let's see if you've been meditating. What was the first preparation? Cleaning up the room.
Taking refuge.
Sitting down.
Proper posture.
Visualizing merit,
Actually, imagining that they're coming into the room. That's even better. If I had a rosary, I should just wade through the. This is what they do in the monastery. If the students aren't ready, the debate master gets his rosary. He wades through the place. He gets anybody inside. He does.
It's a seven ingredient.
Oh, you mean the strong
one. There's
so many cans in there. Then we have one more thing. That's not the two best, but you know five from this time. If anybody in this class is doubling into the point, if you're new and you haven't taken, if this is your first night, you have to talk to me, because you're only allowed to miss two and you've missed two already. So if you want to attend the rest, you have to, we have to talk. And, you need anything else?
Yeah.
Israelis call it a kidnap question.
Can I ask one question?
The sergeant raised him up at 3 a.m. He says 50 mile high. And some stupid guy says, can we bring our pack? And he says, oh, good idea. Yeah. Yeah.
So on the six perfections, so really, the first one, charity. You have to do charity or you can't develop wisdom if each supports the next. Is my understanding
it's symbiotic. Actually, each one supports each other one.
So it's not linear that way?
No.
It's explained as linear and also as non-linear. In other words, you do have to have good charity to get to morality. Good charity helps good morality, but it's not necessarily...
One, and not, if you don't have one, you can't get the other.
Good morality, normally you're going to end up doing charity too. And they also say that they can't be called perfections unless they're done with wisdom. So it's a catch 22. And it works out. They support each other.
Can you perfect the earlier ones before you perfect the later ones?
No.
Or they're not really perfected
the
until they're all perfected?
The true perfection of them occurs in relation to the bodhisattva bhumis, and that's what defines the bodhisattva levels. The 10 bodhisattva levels are defined by perfection of these six perfections. So the first bodhisattva level, you perfect bhumi. Like that.
So you can perfect the earlier ones.
You do.
Or you can only perfect the earlier ones.
But it's not called perfection, it's called attain an incredible ability to practice it. You know, some kind of super ability.
Are you
going to
do chanting?
Excuse me? If you don't know those prayers, open your notebook to the beginning.
Sashi Bhagavad Gita Shemetasham Virat.